Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Now, Guy Barker, he is a trumpet player, band leader, composer, conductor and arranger. He's worked with everyone from Frank Sinatra to Liza Minnelli. He can even be heard in the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley. What a good film to be involved in. He's the associate artist with the RTÉ Concert Orchestra and is conducting at the National Concert Hall on New Year's Eve for A Century of Song, Swing and Soul. And since 2026 marks 100 years of Irish radio, the RTÉ Concert Orchestra will launch the year with a new piece specially commissioned from Guy to mark the occasion. Guy Barker is on the line to tell us more. Good afternoon, Guy.
Hello, how are you doing?
How are you doing? Because I gather you're just off stage from last night, aren't you, in the Albert Hall? How did that go?
I put it this way, I'm having a very delicate morning. But it was
really?
We did a massive concert. It was our 10th anniversary at the Albert Hall.
Congratulations.
I do a Christmas big band concert, but we have like a 38-piece orchestra, loads of amazing guests, and 32 swing dancers that run down the aisles at the end.
So it's
a bit spectacular.
It's a raucous
party afterwards.
Yes. A bit of a party, and you're still rough at 5 past noon. I love it, okay?
Yeah, and I'm flying to Dublin in about 3 hours, 4 hours.
Okay,
I'm rehearsing tomorrow, so
might as well keep the party going. This is exactly the life of a jazz trumpeter I would have expected, Guy. But you're going to be coming to Dublin because you're rehearsing for a very special evening. It's on New Year's Eve. Tell us all about it.
Well, I've done New Year's Eve. This is the third time I've done, and the first time we sort of paid tribute to the Gatsby era of the 20s, and then we did the swing era, and then I was trying to work out what to do, and that's when they said RTÉ is going to be celebrating its centenary on the 1st of January.
Yeah.
So that's when I thought, well, let's do a history of songs and swing, and so, you know, everything. We're doing, you know, some Jelly Roll Morton from the 20s and some Sinatra from the 40s and then some Prince, you know, and even the Paloma Faith song.
So amazing.
We crossed the whole thing. But what I've done is there's a wonderful author who I collaborate with, Rob Ryan, and he's written a beautiful, narration, which will be read at the beginning, that sort of talks about, you know, all the history of the songs, but more importantly, about the history of RTÉ.
Yeah.
And so I looked at the programme of the very first broadcast and picked a couple of pieces out there and sort of arranged it for the orchestra to be an underscore for the speech. And then we'll roar into, you know, the 100 years of song. And at midnight, they wanted another piece I was asked to do another piece to, you know, sort of celebrate after we played Auld Lang Syne. So I thought, well, after, you know, Auld Lang Syne is played, everybody goes mad. So we're going to have to play something quite up tempo so we could be heard, you know. So I searched around and I found what I thought was an original Irish folk song, which was called The Night That Paddy Murphy Died.
Right.
And I saw all of these different versions by famous Irish artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I'd done this arrangement, I just said, it's got to be up, it's got to be fun, it's got to be, you know.
Yeah, New Year's Eve.
And then I discovered that it was actually written in Newfoundland. Sang by American Irish people, and then it came over, and then everybody did it, the Dubliners and all that, and I just thought, let's have some fun with that and just show the orchestra off.
This is an extraordinary amount of work gone into this show, and of course the concert is long sold out, so you're not here to sell tickets for it, but there is a way to enjoy the live broadcast. The whole concert from 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve in the evening goes out live on Lyric, but there's an element as well which adds another bit of frizz to the electricity around New Year's Eve, is that John Creedon is going to throw to it, and it'll be broadcast simultaneously here on RTÉ Radio 1 and also on RTÉ Lyric at the same time at midnight.
Yes, that's right. So it's going to be a great evening, and I'm bringing some wonderful soloists with me that have done this before. We have a wonderful singer, Vanessa Haynes, and we have Tommy Blaze, who many people know as the lead singer on Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah.
And then Joe Stilgo, who's a fantastic singer, songwriter, entertainer. His father is Richard Stilgo, who was the famous lyricist for all the Andrew Lloyd Webber shows and things like that. And then our favourite clarinet player from Saratoga, Giacomo Smith. And of course, the mighty RTE Concert Orchestra.
Yes, giving it the welly. You've been doing this a long time, Guy Barker. How did music come into your life?
Well, I think it was the school brass band.
Yeah.
But was where it first turned up. But you know what? And I'm not the only person to come out with this. As a kid, the Jungle Book. You are hearing Louis Prima and... In the middle of the Bare Necessities, there's an amazing trumpet solo.
It's a fantastic soundtrack, the whole thing.
But I was always, I guess, destined to do something like that because my mother was an actress and my dad was a stuntman.
Mm.
So it was kind of... what was good, because I was brought up in that way, I understood what it would feel like to open your diary and see the last job for the rest of your life and not be frightened. So I think that was...
Did you have a house full of very curious bohemian and arty types coming in and out when you had acting and a film stuntman
Yeah, so there were stunt people that came in and there were some actors and, you know, quite a lot of very colourful people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that kind of upbringing. But then when I started in the school brass band when I was 12, and then I got into it, I played cornet and then trumpet. And then I think my dad got me a trumpet for my 13th birthday. And then he came home with two records. One was Louis Armstrong in the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And the other one was an album called The Golden Era of Dixieland Jazz. And it featured a trumpet player called Rex Stewart, who used to play with the Ellington Band, but he was known by, you know, when the trumpet has those three valves, and he would do things where he would only push them halfway down, so the sound would get choked, and it would almost sound like a baby crying, and it's very vocal. And I used to listen to that when I was like 13 and go, how the hell is he doing that with the same instrument I'm going to play? And then that was it. After that, I got obsessed with music. Jazz and classical music were really the things that turned me on. I mean, obviously, as a kid, I was a Beatles fan. And that was it.
They've got significant legs. Your mum was really a part of television history, wasn't she? She was in the very first episodes of Coronation Street.
Yeah, the very first seven episodes. There was going to be another centre of interest. You know, there was the pub. But they were going to have a fish and chip shop. Well, my mum worked in the fish and chip shop, but the fish and chip shop got dropped. She was on in Z Cars and things. And then she was in Emmerdale Farm.
Yeah.
She was in that. And Brookside.
Really?
But theatre was her biggest love.
That's and she was in the West End.
Yeah, she did. She did 2 years with Murder at the Vicarage. And when I was a teenager, I used to go and see it regularly. You know, and because it always amazed me, because I would go, is that my mum? You know, because she was acting, you know, and there was suddenly a different person on stage. I remember going with my dad to see her in a play where she had to snog Ronnie Barker. And I was looking at my dad saying, is this okay? And he says, it's acting, son, it's acting.
Your dad also shows up in very prominent films too.
Yeah, I would say the same kind of line. He got beaten up by Clint Walker in The Dirty Dozen. And I think he did a car chase in Get Carter. He did flying in a Superman.
That's really cool though, isn't it? Get Carter in a car chase.
Yeah, and there's a few of those things. But as I always tell people, that the one I always remember him for, bless him, was You remember the rise and fall of Reginald Perrin?
Yes, yeah.
Do you remember the opening sequence where he runs along and takes all his clothes off and
of
runs
course.
Into the sea?
Yep.
Yeah, that was my dad. because it was...
How is it your dad?
Yeah, it was Brighton Beach about 6 in the Sunday morning. It was absolutely freezing. I think Leonard Rossiter said, you would get a stuntman for this. I'm not going
He's not going, so it's your dad is a stuntman.
So my dad was in. And
his
then
bare when, rear end on television for a year. Still today, it's repeated.
BBC would pay by his, when, after he died, and because his little royalties, and she would phone me up and say, son, your dad's buns just got me another 50 quid.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Did you say, by the way, Superman there? I think I talked over.
Yeah. There's a bit in Superman where all the bad guys fly down and there's a bus.
Yeah.
And they pick up the bus and throw it. Well, my dad was driving the bus.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there was a bit... But it was a while ago, so there was less skullduggery they could do. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
There was... Yeah.
An incredible cameo. Fortunately, you've kept on the tradition and you make an incredible cameo in the soundtrack for The Talented Mr. Ripley. How did that come about?
Well, I made an album. I had a contract with Polygram and Verve Records and to do 3 albums. And the third album was, they said, would you like to do an album with strings?
Yeah.
And, you know, do some ballads and stuff. And I played a tune on there by Jimmy Rolls, which was called Peacocks, and that's how the album started. And when Anthony McGeller was talking about wanting a band to be in the club in the scene, in that particular scene, and also to be involved in other bits on the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's Matt Damon and Jude Law in the club.
Yeah.
They're becoming the best of friends.
That's right,
yes.
Yeah. And Anthony heard that and said, let's get him. It was like a movie in itself.
Yeah.
And then I went over to Rome and spent a weekend there with the producers and Anthony, and we would just sit and he'd play records and get the right, you know, tunes for the right era, for the right vibe, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to have that tune, the Peacocks, throughout the film here and there. And he said, when was it written? And I think it was written in the early 60s. And he said, I can't use it because the film is set in the late 50s.
He was strict
so
about
the
that,
next
so.
Track on that album was an old standard that was originally a bit of known for Billie Holiday singing called You Don't Know What Love Is. And on my album, Sting sang it. And then Anthony heard that and he said, ah, let's use that. So, you know, when you hear Jude Law practicing his saxophone, he's a lot of the time he's playing You Don't Know What Love Is.
Oh, I see.
And that appears. And then the very closing titles, I did a version of it with John Martin. And so it became the thing. And then that was it. Then we had a wonderful time, you know, filming that scene in Rome in August in a heat wave.
Wow.
In a club that was boiling hot. And they still squirted artificial sweat on us.
It was
great.
There was kind of like a revival of certain tunes as well, wasn't there? Like the Tu Vafal Americano is the one we remember.
Yes.
So this is the iconic tune from the film. You're playing here, aren't you? And this goes through a real resurgence. I want to let people have a listen to this. Tu Vafal Americano, Americano, Americano. Se ne vecchi con papà. Tu vuoi venire alla moda, ma se beve whisky and soda. Guy, it's a fantastic, it's a scene of energy.
Well, you know, we spent 2 days filming that scene in there, and it was just fantastic. We were there all day. We played Moaning first, and then when we did, and it was just so much joy. And then when the film came out, Anthony wanted me and the band to play at a lot of the premieres. So mm-hmm. It was a dream. We played in we played New York, Chicago, really Hollywood, cool. And then Paris and Rome.
Yeah.
And Rome was the last one. And I always remember Jude Law was really excited about it. He said, "We're going to do this in Rome. It's going to be great." And
that's so cool.
And when we were on the stage, it was, you know, we were in Italy. We were just playing in the band, but the place was full of Italian stars. And I remember playing, you know, Tuavaro Americano and Matt Damon and Jude Law and Anthony. Everybody was on the stage with us playing. And I looked out, and there was this lady dancing, and it was Gina Lollobrigida. We were just everywhere we looked.
The Italian stars.
You know, there were these legends.
So yeah, that was Anthony Minghella, the director's idea to promote the film that way was extraordinary. You wouldn't see that much nowadays. You also worked with Frank Sinatra. You also worked with Frank Sinatra and Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, I did that tour called The Ultimate Event, which we did two or three nights in Dublin, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It was with Sinatra, Sammy Davis and Liza Minnelli.
Wow.
We did 6 weeks around Europe and it was fabulous. Yeah.
Did Frank...
We played in the rugby ground. Is it what's it called in Dublin?
The Lansdowne Road. Was it Lansdowne Road Stadium? Perhaps?
Yes.
Yeah,
it,
I was.
It,
oh yes, I'm sure people remember going to see that. And Frank Sinatra, he was hands on at times, was he? With his band,
in my experience was we never really saw him until the gig.
Yeah,
but. He loved the Royal Albert Hall. That was kind of his favourite venue. And that was the only place where we played consecutive nights because we were usually travelling from one town to the next before. But I do remember he turned up to the rehearsal, which we hadn't seen, and he called London by Night. And he rehearsed us. And it was quite amazing because he would stand in front of each section and get emotion out of it, you know. You could see him just trying to convey to each, you know, each section of the orchestra what he wanted. And it was, and then that was it, you know. We had about half an hour to an hour with him like that.
Yeah.
And then he went off stage and that was it. And then we never ended up playing London by Night on the rest of the tour. But it was a great experience.
What a moment, you know, that was.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Whamageddon, Guy, where people try to avoid hearing the song Last Christmas for as long as they can during the festive period.
Oh, right.
But you've been there when the name, when George Michael and Andrew Ridgeley were choosing the name of the band.
Well, yeah. My friend Chris Hunter, who's a fantastic saxophone player, lives in New York. He and I used to run around studio to studio and play on all sorts of things in the 80s. And we were called to go to Good Earth Studios in Dean Street in Soho for a late night session. And I got a message from Chris that he was over at another studio and it was running late. So he was going to be late. So I said to these two guys, do you know what you want us to play? Because there was no music written out or anything. And I said, do you want us to work it out? And they said, no, we know exactly what we want. We've made a recording of the song with a synthesizer playing what we want you to play. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, great. I said, if you can let me hear that or give me a cassette, I'll go to the other room. I've got some manuscript paper. I can write it out. And that means that when Chris arrives, we can go straight on it and we'll be in and out in an hour, you know.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, that would be great if you could do that, you know. And so I wrote the part. Chris came in and we played it and everybody was very happy. And it was at the end where we just said the usual musician's cry of, who do we send the invoice to? And they said, oh, gave us the interest. And I said, and what's the reference? And I said, what do you mean? I said, well, who are you? But, you know. what do you call yourself?
What's the band called?
And I said, well, we don't know yet. We don't know. He said, we haven't worked it out. And I went, I don't know what to do. And then one of the, I can't remember which one, said, well, we are thinking of calling ourselves Wham. And Chris and I just started laughing, you know. And we said, okay, Wham it is then. And then we went out onto the streets of Soho. It was one in the morning. And we were laughing. We were saying, you can't call a band Wham. That's ridiculous. Because it sort of sounded like we're going to call it Biff or Zonk. Or just there, because we hadn't heard the word before. And we thought it was really funny.
That's very funny.
And then that record came out and did nothing. it was Ram Rap. But then they put another song out, and that became a hit. So after that, they put Wham Rap out again, and that became a hit.
It became a hit then.
It was like,
People do remember, by the way, Guy, we're delighted to hear Linda in Gweedore, which is in up in County Donegal. Frank Sinatra, Liza Minnelli and Sammy Davis Jr. That show was in Lansdowne Road. It was the first concert I ever went to, and it was fantastic, says Linda. So what a lovely start to.
Wow. Oh, wonderful. Life. Yeah, no, it was really nice. The thing I remember most of all about that concert is, you know, sometimes when Sinatra's singing on certain songs, they have like a muted trumpet.
Yeah.
On the original recordings, I think it was Harry Edison, and he used to play little figures. And I had one of those to do. And I could see Sinatra there, and I could do that. And his son was conducting. And I just remember him making a sort of gesticulation with his hands, like to tell me to get closer to the microphone. And he said, get right on the microphone.
Right, yeah.
I was terrified because as I went on the microphone, all I could hear was his voice and my trumpet. And it was terrifying. And then his son came over. I said, no, he loves to hear it. Get closer to the
get
mic.
In.
So I said, okay.
Linda sent us her original ticket, which she kept, the 4th of May, 1989. £50 in Irish punts at the time it was.
Good. I've still got the tour book from that. I keep that here in my flat. I just,
Of lots course
of
you would.
Fantastic memories.
Fantastic
of that.
Memories. Guy Barker.
I remember that was one of the last gigs of that particular tour.
And
all staying at that big jury's inn at the time. And,
yes. Yeah.
And I remember Junior. He called us down to breakfast and he said, what do the English people like to eat? And they said, well, curry. So he this huge spread of curry.
From the English musicians.
And all the Americans curry for breakfast. Were into it.
It's been a pleasure, Guy Barker. Thank you so much. And we can listen to A Century of Song, Swing and Soul with the RTÉ Concert Orchestra live from 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve on RTÉ Lyric FM. Guy Barker, thank you so much and enjoy it.
You're very welcome.
Safe
Thank
flight.
You so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks so much. And also, it'll be on RTÉ Radio 1 from midnight when John Creedon hands over live to the National Concert Orchestra. So it's a nice thing. I like sticking on the radio on those big moments as well. What else is going on? From one music legend to another, happy birthday to Keith Richards today. He is 82 years of age. It's a good excuse for this.